My name is Brian O'Leary, and I come from Turin Cahill, which is a townland in Guinea of Gwilla in East Kerry.
Okay, tell me about the area that you grew up in.
Yeah, so I suppose Guinea of Gwilla would be one of the main places associated with the now worldwide, I suppose, famous Slieve Lucra music style. I suppose a lot of the key exponents of the Slieve Lucra music would have actually come from Guinea of Gwilla. I suppose my own family heritage would be strong, and they'd be deeply rooted in that tradition. So I suppose my own grandfather was a man called Johnny O'Leary. Johnny came from a townland in Guinea of Gwilla called Mullagh Cavan, which also produced many other fine exponents of Slieve Lucra music. One such man would have been a huge influence on my own playing, and he was a lifelong friend of my grandfather's, Jimmy Doyle. And he was also, like Johnny, an accordion player. So I suppose straight away to start with that connection, the kind of link, Jimmy Doyle would have actually learned a lot of his early music from my grandfather, because they were neighbours. They came from that same townland, Mullagh Cavan in Guinea of Gwilla. And my grandfather Johnny passed away in 2004. I was only 10 at the time, and even though I would have had memories with him and been taken to his music sessions, I wouldn't have played music at that stage. So it was only kind of the week after Johnny's funeral that I began playing music. I just took down an accordion to my local national school in Turin Cahill and started playing music. And I suppose I went to formal classes and received great tuition from the great Nicky McAuliffe in Castle Island. And Nicky has been a huge influence on my music. And then I was taken to Jimmy Doyle's music session, and it was as if like Jimmy took me under his wing a bit, because of course, you know, he was such good friends with my grandfather, and it was an amazing kind of link, because, you know, my grandfather had passed on the music to Jimmy, and then Jimmy passed a lot of it on to me. So like, it was a nice connection there. So yeah, I suppose going back to my home place and that area, Guinea of Gwilla alone, like I say, some of the names that would come to mind would be Dinis Murphy, his sister Julia Clifford. They would be responsible for maybe producing the finest album ever made of Slieve Lucra music, an album called The Star Above the Garter, and it's still celebrated at most of the festivals in Slieve Lucra and still talked about at all the sessions. So Dinis Murphy and Julia Clifford would be the household names. They were both from Guinea of Gwilla, a place called Lisheen. And then I suppose other names that come to mind from Guinea of Gwilla would be Paddy Cronin. And Paddy was, you know, probably had a different story to the likes of my grandfather and Dinis Murphy, in that Paddy would have immigrated and he would have left Guinea of Gwilla in 1949. And I suppose he would have been one of the first Slieve Lucra musicians to actually record his music in America. And I suppose because of the fact that he left Slieve Lucra while he was still young, I think he was only 24 when he immigrated in 1949, you can hear a different influence almost in his music then, because obviously when he went to America, he would have been influenced heavily by the musicians that were already over there.
Yeah,
a lot of them would have been Sligo musicians. So like, Paddy was always seen as a mix between his home style in Slieve Lucra and also the Sligo music. But they would be some of the names I'd always, I suppose, think about when we think of Guinea of Gwilla. Like like I say, with accordion music, Johnny O'Leary and Jimmy Doyle, and then the great fiddle music of the likes of Dinis Murphy, Julia Clifford, Paddy Cronin.
Brian, you spoke about your grandfather there and that you didn't play music with him growing up, which is so unusual to think a week later you did. Tell me about those memories you had with him going to those sessions.
Yeah, I suppose it's amazing, you know, the bar in which he played a lot of his music, and he's most associated with playing in that bar, was a bar called Den Connell's in Knocknagree, which is just over the border in County Cork. And yeah, the times I was there definitely are memories to cherish. For some reason, when I was with him in that bar, I suppose I was too young to fully appreciate music, really. I had great times with him, but when it came to him starting the music session, I always remember me and my first cousin going to the other side of the bar kind of thing. It just did not resonate. But it's amazing, like, honestly, I suppose it was his passing and seeing maybe I suppose the influence he had on so many people and the amount of people that came to his funeral, that had a profound impact on me, definitely. And like, even simple things, I remember like getting the news of his passing. I had gone to school as normal, but I was told by my grandmother from the other side, and then seeing it appear on RT News, and I was like, God, he was a big deal, all right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's probably where I was like, okay, I kind of want to get more interested in this major part of his life, which was music. And, yeah, the day of his funeral in Guineaguilla, my mother always says this, that I went up to her and I said, I think I'm going to start playing the accordion. At the time, she thought nothing of it because she just thought it was...
The day that was in it.
Yeah, exactly. Emotion talking. But, yeah, I did. I went down to my national school. There was a music teacher coming to Turin Cahill National School anyway, where I went to school. Henry Cronin, who's a fantastic musician here around Killarney Town, still plays great music. And Henry would have taught me all my early tunes in national school. And honestly, it was the following week I went down and just took to it and became so engrossed. And like I've often said, it's a funny thing. Even though I thought I had no interest in music when I was carried to his music sessions, something obviously went in, because as soon as Henry started even teaching me, you know, some of the tunes that Johnny would have played, it was as if they were registered in the head somewhere. Mm-hmm. Do you know, honestly, it was like, these all sound familiar, even though I'd never played music before.
Can you remember the first tune you mastered?
The first tune I mastered, I think it was, which is a household kind of tune now you'd hear sang at weddings and stuff. It's like The Rattling Bog. Are you familiar with that? Mm-hmm. So Henry, I think, would have started me off with The Rattling Bog. But then I always remember the first polka then, we'll say, outside of the beginner tunes, we call them, like The Rattling Bog. I do remember the first polka like that, that I remember saying to Henry straight away, did my grandfather play that? And he said, oh, he did. And I was like, yeah, I definitely heard him play that somewhere. Mm-hmm. So that's a tune that Johnny would have called Dan Sweeney's polka. So yeah, it's amazing. They all stick out. You'd always remember the first couple of tunes you've learned.
Yeah, and it definitely probably brings back some flashbacks for you as well.
Big time, big time. I suppose a set of tunes that I learned very early on as well, that would bring back very clear memories, is the set of tunes he would have played the night he was given the Hall of Fame award at the T.G. Cahir Gratham Keogh Awards. Just, I suppose, he was coming to the end at that particular time. He had been sick for quite a while, and I suppose maybe we all knew maybe that there wasn't long to go. So I suppose the tunes he played then just carried that bit more meaning, do you know? So, of course, when I started playing then, I straight away wanted to learn those two polkas. I was like, what were the two tunes he played at the... So definitely, it's amazing. Certain tunes definitely carry more emotion, especially when you can tie them to a certain event, like I was with those, do you know?
Well, I suppose then as well, you kind of have more of appreciation and... is proudness the right word when playing them?
Yeah, 100%. Proudness. And funny thing... I was talking about it with a couple of the lads. I play a lot of music with myself and Colm Guilfoyle. We're talking about this, and Michael O'Connor. We play a lot of music together. And we were on about where you go when you start playing music. As in, when you close your eyes, what goes through your head, basically.
And I see that a lot with a lot of musicians, closing the eyes.
Closing the eyes. And like, for some people, like I think Colm was mentioning that when he goes into, we'll just say, that place, when he's playing music and closes his eyes, he sees colours. And like, different tunes represent different colours, which was an interesting take on it. And I would say, for me, it's memories. And maybe, particularly if there's tunes that I learned specifically, take again from Jimmy Dial, that man I mentioned that was a huge influence. If I know that was a tune that I remember the day he passed it on to me, it's like, when I have my eyes closed, you're thinking back on the being inside and... the Arbutus Buckley's Bar in Killarney with him. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I suppose the same with tunes then with my grandfather, like moments like that. If I'm playing those two polkas that I mentioned that he would have played the night that he got the Hall of Fame award, you're taking back to that moment in time, you know? And yeah, there's definitely always an element of proudness, though, as you said, with his tunes.
Mm-hmm. Brian, over the last couple of years since you started playing, it must have taken you so many places yourself.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And I suppose, you know, what never ceases to amaze me is, again, linking it to Johnny, is the amount of people that will still come up, the new people I'm meeting, that'll come up and they'll say, are you Johnny's grandson? And I'll say, I am. And they'll have a story. Jesus, we remember meeting him in such a bar in 1972 when he was such a gentleman. And you know, it's lovely. It's like, you know, you're still hearing those stories, which kind of, at this stage of my life, I thought those stories would stop after a certain time, but it's showing that God, he really did.
He made a difference.
Yeah, made a difference with people. And one of the lovely stories, you know, that I always think is a great thing that I've heard about him is, you know, someone called him, he was a therapist before his time, in that when he'd be playing music in Knocknagree, many people observed it. He could be up on stage and, like, he would be, you know, engaging with the dancers and stuff, and everyone would be having a great time, and he would be part of that. But that, you know, if a man came into the bar or somebody came in by themselves and was sitting over in a corner, he took it all in. And when there would be a break in the music, they said Johnny would go over to the person by themselves and talk. And, like, I think that's a lovely thing. And people said, you know, that the memory they'd have then is that person who'd come into the bar by themselves and might be, you know, in whatever kind of a place, he'd always leave them with a smile on their face. So that's one of my favourite stories, that, you know, and more than one people have commented that about him. You know, he had a great awareness, you know, and he was very inclusive of everyone. It was like any time he was playing, everyone had to feel part of it and feel included. So that's a thing that continues to amaze me. So I suppose the connection with Johnny has provided me with some of my happiest moments, even in music. But yeah, traveling, I suppose, has been a huge thing as well. And I mean, getting to play in countries that I never thought I would get the opportunity to play in, you know, play in America. And even I did a 3-week stint in Japan teaching and playing sleeve lucre music, and it was an amazing experience, because, like, you know, I suppose, okay, playing in England and playing in America, you know, they're countries that we'd always think, okay, there would be an appreciation there. I suppose Japan is newer on the scene.
It's out of this world.
Out of this world. And the fact that they were, like, I remember I always say in one of the workshops I was teaching, you know, I expected there to be a very basic knowledge of traditional Irish music. But at one point, you know, I was asked a question about a certain tune on one of my grandfather's albums. And this was from a Japanese accordion player. And he was like, in track 3 on his album Music for the Set, he does something on that, and he was asking me a specific question like that, and I was blown away by it. This was over in Tokyo, like,
oh my god.
So it goes to show, yeah, that Irish music really, and particularly sleeve lucre music, it's travelled worldwide, you know. And that's a great thrill, like, because I do often think the likes of my grandfather and his friends Dennis Murphy and Judy Clifford, they surely probably never thought that their music would be
always over in Japan.
Absolutely. Yeah. And even, you know, the last time we spoke was as part of the Portugal Key Festival in Castle Island. I mean, that man's legacy is unbelievable, because he died in 1963. And, you know, there's more and more coming to light about with his music, and so far as manuscripts being found and donated to the National Music Archives. And, like, in every collection of manuscripts, there's new music. So, like I said, again, to one of my friends, I said, it's like Padraig O'Keefe died in 1963, but he's nearly still teaching us from beyond the grave. Like,
well, what I think is amazing about the Padraig O'Keefe Festival is, when I went there and I met you a couple of months ago, is the amount of students and children that are, you know, getting in the scene. And it's all because of his festival now.
Yeah. It's an amazing thing, because even I think Connor O'Mahony, who's a member of the festival and a great kind of man for the area, because he's so engrossed in it, and it's great to see someone young getting involved in a festival like that.
I will be honest, I didn't expect Connor to be so young when I first met him. I was blown away.
Yeah, and he really gets it. And, you know, he's trying to, I suppose, he's a great man like that for the younger musicians in the area. And even, you know, like that, you see the teenagers that were at that event with the school's outreach program, and he made a comment about, like, that it had already doubled, you know, from the last one that was, and I think it's going to grow and grow, really, because the interest in Irish music is huge. And, like, it's amazing, like, from the time I was playing music, I've seen it just grow and grow and grow. It's like, I don't think it was as popular even when I was learning music. It's like, it's an explosion now. And of course, with that then comes, I mean, the the talent goes through the roof. And I mean, the technique and everything is brought up,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like taken to new levels continuously.
Mm-hmm.
So like that, you'd have absolutely no fear of traditional music when it comes to numbers and talent and everything.
Well, that's the thing. I've interviewed a good few children, families, parents and everything about, you know, flag shows and getting prepared for that and how busy their calendars can actually be by, if it's not, you know, training, it's rehearsals, it's getting to the competitions, it's making those journeys. But mm-hmm. it's down to the family to bring them and, you know, support them.
It is, absolutely. I mean, to be fair, like, parents are doing a great thing, because I do often think, how did they do it? Because, you know, these kids might be also involved in sports teams, and, you know, they might be out other evenings of the week. So it really is a devotion to the cause, really.
Mm.
I suppose what we've often said, another change that maybe has happened in traditional Irish music is obviously technology. Like, even when I was learning my music from Nicky McAuliffe, you were more or less reliant on your weekly class with Nicky and maybe learning tunes from Jimmy Doyle in the Arbutus and Killarney as your source of tunes. Whereas I suppose nowadays, with the help of YouTube and just mm-hmm. everyone has phones, and that even has created a change
mm-hmm.
For the better. But also then, maybe the flip side is, I would consider me and my friend's age group very lucky to get, you know, what was the tail end of open music sessions that we were able to maybe spend time with older musicians and yep. learn from them in that setting. Mm-hmm. Because unfortunately, I suppose we have seen a bit of a change in that the open traditional Irish music sessions that once were completely part of the norm and you'd have several options on a weekly basis, I suppose you don't see as many of them now.
Mm-hmm.
And for younger musicians, I think it makes it more challenging for them in so far as learning the old repertoires and maybe even learning session etiquette, because I think that's even a mm-hmm. thing as well. Do you know, when I was younger and going into, again, that session in Killarney in the Arbutus with Jimmy, the first couple of times you go in, do you know, your repertoire might be very poor. You might only know 10 tunes, but like, you're building much more than just music week by week. Mm-hmm. You're learning how people talk to each other.
Yeah.
The kind of general crack at a session. You're learning invaluable things that you'll take with you for life as a mm-hmm. musician.
And you're taking on memories as well.
Memories as well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the one thing, I suppose, in many ways, although it's, you know, a huge advantage for younger musicians now with all, you know, the options they have at their disposal, online classes, everything, you know, they can learn, like, Kerry musicians can learn from a musician from Galway now without any problems. You know, they can learn an amount of tunes and technique and all that, but I suppose I would say the sessions and learning from older musicians was invaluable. And unfortunately, I think that's where maybe we have to kind of, as I suppose musicians that came through that, look at how we can maybe bridge that gap that isn't maybe as accessible for younger musicians now, and maybe look at, okay, what's the next best thing? Because I do think for any young musician, learning tunes is great and expanding repertoire and technique and everything, but there's something to be gained from being amongst older musicians as well. And mm-hmm. kind of, because that's the one thing I used to love about music. Like, when I was 12, 13, I had friends that were 12, 13, but I also would say I had friends in their 70s and 80s, do you know? Because you just get so comfortable. Yeah. It's you know, it's a very inclusive environment.
And it lights up their day as well, you know, because you're not just learning from them, but they're learning from you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I honestly do always think about the likes of Jimmy, and there was other musicians. There was another man from Scarta Glen, Dan Jeremiah O'Connor, and like, any time I'd meet him, you could tell the enjoyment they'd get from, we'll say, if they passed a tune on to you that you didn't know, it was like they left happy as well, because they felt mm-hmm. okay, that's another tune passed on to the next generation. Yeah. Do you know, so mm-hmm. I suppose it was a win-win for everyone. And yeah. Yeah, certainly it was a great time to you know, develop musically. Like, so I suppose it's like everything, it's kind of, it doesn't have to be like a case of that's done. I suppose yeah. we have to look positively at it and say, okay, just fair enough, the amount of music sessions that are happening and the accessibility might be gone, and it might be a change from before, but I'm sure there's a way that can be provided to younger musicians, just maybe in a new format, in a new way. Mm-hmm. And I think what we saw in the school's outreach program even was nearly like a blast in the past. It was like an open free-for-all, which was good. And I think young musicians need that. They need opportunities like that.
I don't think I've done a KD since primary school for Shockton DeGlair. I don't know what I do it now. I wouldn't have the steps for it. But, you know, it was a crack of it and it was just having fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what people are... I think that's what's drawing people back to the Irish music again.
Yeah, the memories of, absolutely, of our childhood. Brian, it's a question I hate people asking me sometimes where they ask, oh, where do you see yourself in the next 5 years? But I'm going to ask you, where do you see yourself in the next 12 months?
In the next 12 months... great question. I suppose I would always say it's very important for your music and I suppose your creativity to be always thinking ahead. So like, I suppose in the previous couple of years there and even during the COVID period, I would have got deeply into composing music, which was a thing I never really did before COVID. But, you know, different initiatives, even I was part of an initiative with RTE where they asked 10 traditional Irish musicians in the country to compose music in response to the lockdown. And I suppose that maybe gave me a welcome challenge, because up to that point, I suppose I was continuously looking at the past and trying to learn as much music from, you know, years gone by and old Sliabh Lucre music from Páirc O'Keefe from my grandfather. And I always probably felt a little bit uneasy at the thought of composing myself, just because I felt there's still too much of the old stuff that needs to be revitalized, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that was I was surprised by how much I enjoyed it. And that kind of ended with an EP that was brought out under the Sliabh Lucre label by Eoghan Stan O'Sullivan, who's been a brilliant ambassador for the music. And that was fantastic. So I suppose... it's gas. I'm kind of gone to the other stage now. I know there's a lot of music that I've kind of gathered, again, from archives. Even there's a local archive now that's all up on SoundCloud that PJ Tehan would have you know, been involved in. PJ is involved in the Handed Down in Scarta Glen, and he's collected all these old pieces of music from maybe cassette tapes that people had in presses and stuff. Digitalized them all, they're all freely available. So like, I spent hours going through those kind of things, and I think I'm gone back now to maybe looking at, okay, I'd like to try and maybe work at getting some of these out there again. So it's like, it's funny, I suppose every musician will tell you that you go through phases, you know. Like I say, around COVID I was composing all new music and I was really in that zone, whereas now I think the next step for me, maybe in the next 12 months or next, maybe I'll give myself 2 years, is to somehow get something out there of the old Sliabh Lucre music again that I would have kind of gathered now in more recent times.
Yeah, and it'd be lovely as well, because from you doing that, we'll see younger people, you know, trying to do that.
Absolutely.
And learning from that.
Absolutely, because I do think it's maybe, again, you know, living in the world we're in, where everything is just easily accessible to us.
Yeah.
Doing that kind of thing is a bit more... it takes time, because it's a hard graft, because you're listening through, you could be listening to hours of material and you could be listening to an hour of a tape and there might be no new tune, you might know every tune, and you're only listening on the off chance that one might come, you know. So it's a devotion, all right, but I think it's all about, I suppose, keeping them in circulation. And like, that's why I think, you know, there's been other Sliabh Lucre musicians even in the past few years, and they've tried to do the same, do you know, I suppose, by recording an album and even putting a few of the older tunes back into the circulation. Like you said, young musicians that buy the album, then they'll start playing them, that's the hope, and next thing before you know it, they're part of the mainstream session tunes again. That's kind of, so I suppose it's like you're leaving a legacy that way. And I think that's where I'm at now again at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Brian, you're going to play a tune for us. Tell us about the tune.
Well, I was thinking about this. I suppose these two polkas, again, thinking about tunes that are synonymous with my grandfather and maybe painting memories. He just always played these two polkas together, and they're two that Jimmy Doyle would have played as well. They're just kind of really old Sliabh Lucre tunes. That would have been associated, Johnny, I think, associated him with a man called Din Tarrant from Belly Desmond, who was a friend of Páirc O'Keefe's and would have been around the same time as Páirc.